we go about our daily business, and sometimes we forget about these things, but to literally be a child of God for the rest of eternity, to live forever. You know, in this life, we have a short lifetime, but to live forever and ever and ever, and it just keeps going. You think, what an amazing thing that's attached to this concept of salvation, to never be sick again. And some of you have had the flu in the past or terrible diseases, and think, no more sickness in the family of God. Tremendous blessing. There's the part where we'll receive an inheritance. And we can't even imagine how much God has in store to give to us and work with us. And that will go on and on. It'll be a place where there's no more sin. And that's hard to imagine because in our physical lives, everywhere we look, whether at others or at ourselves, there's always sin involved from day to day. But instead of that, there will be peace. There will be abundance. And we could go on and on with all these descriptors that describe what salvation is all about, what God is offering us. And yet, as humans, our days can be so busy that we don't really think about the salvation that God has offered us. Not like we should. For those children that go to school every day, they're busy with that and homework and all that. For those of you who work, you know how much time that takes. Getting ready in the morning, driving to work, working a full day, coming home. And it seems like you have no time left. You can feel behind every day. Like, I just didn't get done what I needed to. Like, oh, I can never catch up. Or the days just aren't long enough. I'm sure that most of us have felt that way at times. How can we be content with the 24 hours each day that God has given us? This actually applies to everyone around the world. But I'd like to narrow it down to us here, the saints, the called out ones, the elect. Because we've been invited by God to live a certain way. We've been asked to view life differently at this point in life. To look at it the way God wants us to. He's saying, I have goals for you. I want you to seek first my kingdom. I want you to overcome. I want you to watch and pray. And all the commands that we have throughout the Bible, God is saying, these are a part of what your life should include. And so my title today is Making the Most of Our Time. Our life is a gift from God. And we can break that down. Every hour, every minute, every second, or every decade, every year is so precious because it's given by God to us. And yet we can waste days, we can waste hours. Sometimes we don't appreciate them. Other times we can be so frustrated because we say, I don't have enough time to do all the things I want. And we look at it in a negative way. As Christians, we must value the time that we've been given. We must continually organize and update, in a sense, what we do each day because God is asking us to work it so that it's better and better with the time that He's given us. You know, at one time I thought, I've looked at my backyard and say, I spend all these hours out there trimming the bushes, watering, mowing, weed eating, all the things that we do in the yard. And I'm always saying, I don't have enough time just to sit out there, have a glass of tea and just enjoy it. But it comes down to really, I need to make the time for that. And I know there's areas in your life that you could apply and say, why don't I make time for these important things in life? And so today I would like to focus on several of God's guidelines for our time. And I'm going to pose three questions that we can think about. The first question is your time balanced? Is your time balanced? Most of us have been on the freeway, speeding down the road, and you have that rough ride because the tire's out of balance. And it's noisy, and it wears on us, and it wears out the tire. And so we go, wow, I have to get that into the shop and get that tire balanced because it's not right. Well, sometimes our lives get the same way. They're out of balance. And I'm sure all of you can think of instances where you go, at that point in my life, things weren't going well, and I wasn't even thinking straight, and I didn't line it up right like that tire. And so it wore on us. And the key here is that we need God's help to give us the balance. We need His inspiration. We need His scriptures and His words to analyze our life and to see how to get in balance. Let's begin today in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1. You know, so many times in our life, we have all these items that fill up our time. And we need to prioritize what we do. We need to do the most important things first. And sometimes, in my life I do that, I'm sure some of you do, we let those less important items sneak up to the top of the list and they crowd out the more important things. Let's notice here what Solomon says, and here in Ecclesiastes, regarding what happened in life, but I still want you to think about how you put them all in order. It continues with several other things. Let's pick it up in verse 7. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. And we could add to these. There's all those things that happen in our life. Let's look at verse 10. He says, I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out what the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. So that's God's purpose for us. All these things, all these items that happen time after time, and God is saying, the end result is I want you to rejoice. I want you to have happy, fulfilled lives, to have abundant lives. And we know that if we look at God's law and it shows us how to live properly, that's the key there of how to live a balanced life. All these items then are battling for our time every single day. And everyone around the world has the same amount of time every day, 86,400 seconds. But it's critical how we use those seconds. How we organize them. Let me give you a quote here. I don't have who spoke this, but it says, for every minute spent in organizing, an hour is earned. For every minute spent in organizing, an hour is earned. And I thought about that. I go, that seems pretty high. And then I thought a little bit more, and I go, you know, recently I wanted to paint my pool deck. And I had a couple gallons of paint left over from the last time I painted a few years back. So I said, I'm going to paint as far as I can, and when I run out, I'm going to go get a match and paint the rest of it. And so I did that. I go into the store, and I brought the old paint can lid with all the information on it and said, please match this so I can continue painting. Guy said, okay, I'll do that. He says, go shop a little bit, come back, I'll have it ready. So I looked, when I picked it up, I just looked at it real quick, and it had the same color name. I thought, okay, that's good. And I went home, painted it all out. And you know how when it's wet, you can't really tell exactly the color it's going to be. But as it dried, what a vast difference. I mean, dark, it was like darker brown to lighter tan. I thought, this is not good, it looks like. And so, if I had taken the time to look and seen the colorant that they had added, then this saying applies. That if I had spent just another minute organizing my time looking at, I would have saved all the time of painting all that second portion. And then going back to the store, getting more and repainting it. And so this statement is true. And God wants each one of us to recognize how we use our time. You know, each day we have sleep. It takes a great amount of time. For some of the older people, maybe you only need to sleep 5 hours. But the kids, maybe up to 10 hours. But that's a huge chunk of time. Then we have our work, our school, and driving back and forth, the homework, and all the things combined with those. That's another huge chunk. And then you think about eating. And not just the meal itself, but purchasing the food, preparing it, cleaning up afterwards. And you start adding all these up, and it really doesn't leave us that much time at the end of the day, does it? But there are still, you know, you have to get showered every day and dress. We need to do some housework, possibly yard work. There's playing with the kids. There's walking the dog. There's paying the bills. And I could just go on and on. And you think about, how do I get all of these things done in a balanced approach? It's not that easy. So we have to do the essential items first, don't we? The very important need to be at the top of the list. And the less important come further down. And if we have time for that. But haven't you found, just as I have, that at the end of the day, we can look at the accomplishments and go, wait a minute, I did some of these things way down here. But I left out, or I used up my time so that these were left out. And I wasn't able to accomplish something very important to me. And we've all done that. I mean, for instance, prayer or Bible study, that we filled our time in a wrong way so the critical, the important items can diminish. We cannot let the less important take priority. Because if we do, the less important will win out. We need balance. Because it's so easy to watch the extra television, to text people, so easy to spend extra time on Facebook, which is fine. But does it take out time from something that's really important? This is from the Parents Television Council, and it says facts and TV statistics. And from that I found, it says there's a new study in the Journal of Pediatrics, and it says this: a teen typically spends more than 11 hours on media a day. 11 hours. All the sources of media. It goes on to say 13 to 17-year-olds send an average of 3,300 texts per month. I mean, at first I wouldn't believe it, but they've done studies. And all I can say is hopefully that isn't the case with our teens. Because if it is, we're unbalanced. We're not leaving time for those more important things. I've noticed that the important items seem to be less demanding. In other words, they're more polite. They wait patiently for us to get around to them. So let me give you an example. You know, every so often for those that are married, we should have a date with our spouse, a little time, special time with them. But it isn't easy just to put that off. And even though it might be important, and you might only do it once a week or once a month, it can get kicked down in the list and not even be recognized, not even be accomplished. What about time with our kids? We can go home after work, and there they are, doing things, and we go, I'll get to them a little bit. I got to get this done. And the boss said, do this. And all these things that we could fill in there. And sometimes by the end of the evening, you haven't even spent much time with the children. Fasting is another thing. You know, isn't it so polite? You go, I'll get around to fasting, but maybe the whole year's gone by. And you go, wait a minute. I only fasted once, and that's because God commanded me to on the Day of Atonement. I didn't fast other times. And so my point here is those important things, they aren't as demanding as some of the less critical things are. And we have to consider that. Those less important items can seem urgent. They're saying, put me first. In other words, Monday Night Football, right? Put me first. It jumps in front of everything else. Like, well, I'll do my studies, Bible study later. I'll do my prayers. Or how about that snack during the football game? Like, well, I've already eaten three meals. I should be okay, right? But, oh, no, I got to have a snack. Put me first. And so these items jump out at us. For kids, maybe video games. Put me first. Oh, I'll do that instead of my homework. I'll do the homework later, but sometimes we don't have enough time. It's easy for us to move less important items higher on the list, even though they're not urgent. And if continued, we have a price to pay, don't we? When the most important stuff is neglected, it comes back at us. Just like missing sleep. You'll eventually pay for it. Eating junk food too much. You'll pay for it. It's similar to a volcano. You know, the people living down in the valley and the mountains rumbling a little bit, putting off a little steam, maybe even a little lava comes out. They go, oh, it's okay. I still have more time. But just like that, one day our life explodes if we ignore the warning signs too long. Like our homework. You know, kids, you might have an assignment in school, and they say, oh, you have 3 weeks to get this report, this paper done, this project. So you go, oh, I got plenty of time. But if we tend to put it off, and all of a sudden that day is time to turn it in, you go, oh, no, I haven't done it. I didn't complete it. I put other things in front of it. For homeowners, it might be your roof. Like, there's a little leak in the roof, but it's not raining now. Put that off. Then the rains come, and all of a sudden you look up, and the sheetrock ceiling is stained, or the drywall's bulging or dropping off the ceiling. So it's easy to ignore things that are important and do less important. At times we could say, I don't have enough time to get things done. But are we sometimes really saying, I really don't feel like it? At times we're saying that, just like the homework. You know, when you say, I don't have time to do all that homework, we're saying, I don't want to do it in some cases. Or could it be that we're not willing to establish a list of priorities? You know, to put all these things down and then to follow that list so that we are organized and we're getting the most important done first. Let's go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 11. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. I think in today's society, it's harder for us to prioritize our time than it was in the past, because so much is happening around us. I mean, if you don't have anything to do and you have a split second to just relax, your phone can beep or buzz, and that can be a text or an email or a phone call, and you're going, oh, and all of a sudden it just fills your time, even though you wanted to have relaxation time. And so we have to consider that. Notice what Paul says here in 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. But I fear lest somehow as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. And we can look at Eve's life and say, why in the world did she get unbalanced? Why did she take of that fruit? Now God says, don't eat of all the trees, don't eat this tree. And yet that's what she did. And if we are honest with ourselves, we can look at ourselves and say, why did I do this with my time? Why did I make that choice? And so it's critical for us to examine in that way and to think about that. Satan wants us to be out of balance. He's wanting us to follow our priorities instead of God's. And so I recommend that we make a list. It can either be in our head or on paper. But we write down and arrange the things that you should accomplish every day. Things that we need to get done, things that we enjoy, and so forth. But it's all labeled out there. You can put them all out there, and over time you can arrange them differently to fit what is best. God is training us to be His children, and we're simply the first group, the first fruits, getting ready to help in the kingdom of God, getting ready to help serve all those whom God will call later. And He's wanting us to learn in this life how to balance our time, how to grow, how to develop. And it's easy to let the world kind of come in on us and be frantic in everything we do and not get the important things done. In what way do you waste your time? You know, think about that some. Because we all do. In what ways are you out of balance? Because we tend to forget how precious time is. And yet God expects us to balance it out so that we can be productive, so that we can be fruitful in that. There's only so many days in our life. And if kids, if you think there's so much time ahead in your life, you're just a teen and you've got all this time, just go ask an elderly person how quickly time has gone by. And they will rapidly tell you that it goes by so quick. You better use the time while you've got it, because before you know it, you'll be looking back at the last 70 years. Let's look at a second question. How do we redeem the time? We know that God commands us to follow this principle, but we can't undo the past. We can't get back time that's already gone. So how do we redeem it? Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 10. God is watching us every moment, and He knows exactly how you and I spend our time. And if we look at our time as a gift from God, then we should be using it wisely, not wasting it as we can. Let's look at a few statements here that Paul makes. Ephesians 5, we'll begin in verse 10. He makes this statement, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. Think about how important that is. That should be the main consideration of our time. The one who created us. What does He want for our purpose in life? Are we using our time to accomplish those goals? I need to find out what is acceptable to Him and show Him honor and respect by following those guidelines. Let's skip down to verse 15. So in finding out what's acceptable, notice what he says. This is one of the ways we do that. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. And that word circumspect is a Latin word. It means to look round about. It means to be watchful, to be wary, to be cautious, in order to avoid danger. That's what God's asking us to do. To be very cautious about what we do. But the Greek word for circumspect is slightly different. It means correctly, accurately, or perfectly. And so Paul is encouraging us to be careful in how we live. He's saying the time that God has given you on this earth, are you looking at it circumspectly? Are you careful in how you live it? Because it is truly a gift from God. Notice verse 16. He goes on to say, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. And that word redeem means to buy up. That is, to ransom. Figuratively, to rescue from loss. In other words, to improve our opportunities. And so to redeem the time is to use more diligence in the improvement of our time. It's not to get back time that's already gone. We can't do that. It seems like it means that, but it's really saying, make the most of your time. Let me read from a couple translations here regarding this verse. The International Standard Version translates redeeming time as making the best use of your time. The NIV says this, making the most of every opportunity. So we should ask ourselves, in what way have we wasted the most time? Because we need to change that. We need to work on it and do better. Let me read what Adam Clark in his Bible commentary says about this section of Scripture. Quote, buying up those moments which others seem to throw away, steadily improving every present moment, that you may, in some measure, regain the time you have lost. Let time be your chief commodity. In time, you are to get a preparation for the kingdom of God. If you don't get this in time, your ruin is inevitable. Therefore, buy up the time. And that's what God is asking us to do. As Christians, we're to walk in that way, being careful, being wary about how we use our days, and to continually work them and to analyze the list of that we have as important and less important things, and to work that and rearrange it so that we're improving it continually. So verse 16 again says, redeeming the time because the days are evil. And that word evil is the Greek word poneros. It means hurtful in its effect on you. Hurtful in its effect. And so God inspired these words so that we're mindful of the ways that society around us can harm us. And so he says, be wary, be cautious, because we see how the world's living. We see the direction they're going. They're not using time wisely in a lot of cases. And so these different ways that are evil can be harmful to us as Christians, because we've been called to a new way. God is saying, I want you to be a new creation, to be different, to be a light. And in the world, there's darkness, and I've invited you out of that. And so it's important that we not only walk cautiously, as the Latin word circumspect suggests, but it also says we're to strive to live correctly and accurately, as the Greek meaning implies. That's what God is asking us to do. Verse 17, therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So God's will is saying to each and every one of us, use your time wisely. It's a gift from me. Plan out your days. Follow that plan and improve it as you go along. Just like we teach our children. You know, I've noticed some kids throughout the summer waste a lot of time, but if we're doing the right thing, we should have our kids when they're out of school. Like during the summer, you need to read some. You need to do some chores. You need to keep up, you know, exercise, run and play. Just don't lay around all day. Don't sleep half the day. So we teach them. That's the same thing our Father is wanting us to learn as His children, to use our time wisely. Here's a quote by Carl Sandburg. He says, time is the coin of your life. It is the only coin you have, and only you can determine how it will be spent. Be careful, lest you let other people spend it for you. And that's true, because sometimes a mate, sometimes family members, friends, can pull you and say, let's do this with your time. But they're not considering some of your core values of Bible study, prayer, or other things. And they're neglecting that, whereas we have to keep that in mind. Others can place demands on us that leave no time for the more important items. So I wanted to look at one area in which Americans spend their time, because these numbers, to me, are shocking. These statistics were compiled by the organization TV Free America. The average American watches more, I think it's closer to 5 hours, but the average American watches more than 4 hours of television every day. That's the average. Some are higher, some are lower. This is what they balanced out. And so 4 hours a day, think about that. That's 1/6 of the 24-hour period. So if now we just apply that to a year, 1/6 of a year is 2 months. If you watch 4 hours a day, you're watching 2 months of television around the clock, 24 hours a day. And that's staggering. But see how it adds up? A lot of people. I was talking to my daughter. She goes, you know, I could see how that works because it's easy to come home from work. You sit down to watch a show, and then something else comes on. You watch that. And she goes, I bet those numbers are right, even though that seems really high. And so the average American watches that much television. And by the age of 65, people will have watched TV for 9 continuous years, 24 hours a day. That's a waste of time, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying all of the time watching, but I'm saying that much is not in balance. And that's a lot of time, and that's what the average American is doing today. And so one area for Christians to be careful in is, don't be like the average American. I mean, God says, come out of this world, think about these, and redeem the time. Here's a few more statistics. The American families have been greatly influenced by the television. Under that category, it says 99% of households possess at least one television. And that makes sense. But only 1 out of 100 doesn't have one. Now, I can still remember when I was a child getting our first television. And back then, the rule for the family was 1 hour of TV, 2 shows on Sunday evening, nothing during the school week, but just 2 half-an-hour programs. That's all that was allowed. And we always wanted to watch more, but I look back and go, that was a good rule. But today, we have an epidemic. The percentage of U.S. homes with 3 or more TV sets, 66%. The number of hours per day that the TV is on in the average U.S. home, 6 hours and 47 minutes. 2/3 of children in the U.S. have television sets in their bedrooms. That's amazing. I can't imagine my parents ever letting me have a television set. The number of hours of TV watched annually by Americans, 250 billion. So that's a little under a billion hours wasted almost every day. You know, 3/4 of a billion hours most likely wasted. I'm not going to say every show is a waste, but I'm just saying that's a lot of wasted time. The percentage of Americans who say they watch too much television, 49%. I'm sure it's higher than that wasted, but 49, almost half of the people say, I admit, I'm wasting too much time. Let me give you a few facts regarding the average child in the U.S. The number of minutes per week that parents spend in meaningful conversation with their children. Meaningful conversation. Parents to child, 3.5 minutes for the whole week. Now compare that with the number of minutes per week the average child watches television. 1,680. Isn't that amazing? And so that's why we come up with this next statistic. When 4 to 6-year-olds were asked to choose between watching television and spending time with their fathers, 54% said, I want to watch TV. Isn't that amazing? Get to go play with dad, but it's not like I want to watch some show, some cartoon, whatever it is. And so the average American youth spends 900 hours each year in school. But they watch 1,500 hours in that year as well. So how great is the influence of television? And I'm just picking one area here. There's other areas we waste time. How great is the influence? Here's what this one article said. Millions of Americans are so hooked on television that they fit the criteria for substance abuse as defined in the official psychiatric manual. Heavy TV viewers exhibit 5 dependency symptoms. 2 more than necessary to arrive at a clinical diagnosis of substance abuse. And so here's what these include. They list 7. There's 6 items here. 1, using TV as a sedative. So if you watch TV and you fall asleep, that's one of them. 2, indiscriminate viewing. 3, feeling loss of control while viewing. 4, feeling angry with oneself for watching too much. 5, inability to stop watching. And 6, feeling miserable when kept from watching. And so we have to stop and think. Are we falling under these guidelines any? Because we have a lot to do in life. God has called us to use our lives properly. I know in my life, I've watched too much over the years. I've wasted time. But we have choices of how to prioritize and change that. Of course, people spend an enormous amount of time in texting, Facebooking, gaming, and you could go on and on. I'm just picking one example here with TV. And so my focus isn't on these activities, but are we careful with the time that we've been given? Because it is a precious gift from God. And we're all prone to weaknesses that cause our lives to be imbalanced. Let me give you a quote by Harvey McKay. He says, "Time is free, but it's priceless. You can't own it, but you can use it. You can't keep it, but you can spend it. And once you've lost it, you can never get it back." Satisfied, I think that's why you continue to watch. Because it doesn't have that lasting impact. Like, I watched that show and it had this many murders, this many lies, and on, you go, what kind of impact is that on my life? And so we must evaluate our time and consider how God views what we do. Let's look at a third question. Are you spiritually awake? Physically, we need to rest, don't we? But spiritually, God says, no, don't be asleep. I want you to be awake. I want you to be alert and moving forward. And so a good place to start in time management is in our relationship with God. The priorities there, because those should be right at the top of the list. At the end of each day, do we seek first the kingdom? Did we fulfill that on our list? We have to make time for prayer and Bible study. And I'm guessing all of us at times have come to the end of the day and somehow we ran out of time. And one day here or one day there, we slipped up on prayer or Bible study and other things, or serving, whatever it might be, because we didn't use our time wisely. It's similar to tithing. When you get that paycheck, if you don't say, this first tithe is God's portion, and this second tithe is commanded, if I don't do it right then as a priority, it's easy to spend too much and then go, uh-oh, I don't have enough. And so in the same thing with our time, we've got to get those most important things in there before too much time is used up. Let's turn to Romans chapter 13 and verse 11. Romans 13, verse 11. Paul is reminding us to stay awake regarding the things of God. Let's notice a few statements he makes here. Romans 13, verse 11. He says, and do this. And so if you look at the previous verse, it's talking about how love is the fulfillment of the law. So he's saying, keep my laws. That's what we're to be doing. And do this, knowing the time that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. You know, those words, high time, should hit us. That should be a top priority in the lives of every Christian. It's so important. And we need to realize the seriousness of the times in which we live. Why? Because of what he says here. It has to do with our salvation. I mean, that's this gift that I mentioned at the beginning. God is offering that to us. And if we waste our time, we could lose out on the gift of salvation. The very thing which God has called us to understand. You know, why he's willing to bring us into his family. And all these things we can ignore if we don't properly organize our days. Let's notice verse 12. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. Do you sense the urgency in this statement? What God has purposed is drawing closer with every passing day. He's really saying, the kingdom is coming. Are you getting ready? Are you preparing day by day so that you can be the children I've trained you to be? I've worked with you. I've molded you and shaped you. Are you ready? And think about it. The days are passing by. What are you doing with your time? Continuing here, he says, therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lust. So will we be ready when the time comes? It all depends on how we use our time and whether God is a priority on that list with how we use it. Here's a quote from William Penn. He says, time is what we want most, but what we use worst. And I think each of us can apply that to our lives and say, yes, I've taken time. It's a gift from God, and I've thrown it away at times just by wasting it away. So I ask us, is our relationship with God a high priority every single day? Because if not, what it's telling us here is it's time to wake up. If it hasn't been, get going. There's still time. So much is happening in the world today. And we only see the tip of the iceberg, don't we? Think about it from God's viewpoint. I mean, He's sitting on His throne, overlooking the universe, knowing everything, knows all the stars by name. He knows the number of hairs on our head. He knows your life. He knows your thoughts. He knows it all. Therefore, He sees how bad the world is. He knows things that people are plotting and planning before it ever happens. And if we're not praying, if we're not studying the Bible, the Word of God, if we're not meditating and fasting, if we're not serving and growing, then we won't recognize the signs of the times when they come. You know, in the first chapter of Revelation, it says the time is near. And you think about that. Time is near? What if somebody read that 500 years ago? But it still applies. It's also supposed to be watching world events to see how prophecies are coming along and so forth. So here's a few articles I picked out. I'll read little snippets from these. The first one is entitled, One Day, Tomorrow Won't Arrive. This is by Paul Roberts, and it was written at the end of October, just about 30 days ago. Now, Paul Roberts, I didn't even write it down, but he has a huge line of credits to his name. He served at all these universities and so forth. He knows what he's talking about, and he says this. The U.S. military is now second class compared to the Russian military. And then he gives examples. And here's some of the examples. Washington's enormously expensive F-35 jet fighter is no match whatsoever for Russian fighters. U.S. tanks are no match for Russian tanks. The U.S. Navy has been made obsolete by Russia's hypersonic maneuvering Zircon missile. The speed and trajectory changes of the Russian ballistic missile has nullified Washington's system. In other words, they're so far advanced that whatever we have won't even defend us against this. He says one missile is sufficient to take out Great Britain or France or Germany or Texas. And it only takes a dozen to wipe out the United States. And so you think about what could happen overnight. What could happen so quickly? A thief in the night. So this is what experts are saying about world conditions, about our nation. And we can see that we're declining rapidly. And once again, we only see a little bit as we read these articles. This is just the tip. God sees the whole picture. Another article was entitled Kim's Bio War. And it's regarding Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. And the article, I won't go into it, but it basically talks about how he's mass-producing biological weapons. Anthrax, cholera, the plague, smallpox. And these highly infectious diseases could be spread via a missile, a drone, a plane, a sprayer, all these different ways. They could change life overnight. And what the article states is this, that keeping up with how far they've come in this development of these pathogens being weaponized, it's hard to tell because when they shoot off a missile, we can see how far it goes. When they detonate a nuclear bomb underground, we can see how powerful it was by equipment. But this, it's behind doors, and we really don't know how bad it is. Another article, it's called The College Fix. It's by John Paul Ferguson. He says, today a number of universities around the country have officially recognized pagan or Wicca student groups. In 2010, Syracuse University appointed its first pagan chaplain. Others have followed suit, including designating specific areas on campus for pagan or spiritual worship. This is what's happening in our colleges. The young minds, the future leaders, this is what they're being trained. Now colleges from the University of Texas to MIT have their own student pagan groups, while institutions such as the University of Arizona allow pagan-identified students to be excused from class on Wiccan holidays. And so the world just continues to go downhill in so many ways. Notice this part. The vice president of the Pagan Student Union at the University of Baltimore said this. I think one of the things that really helped solidify for me that paganism was the path for me was the almost complete freedom I had. Isn't that amazing? He goes on to say, there is no one holy text that we must all read. There is no organized church service which is mandatory to attend. There is no concept of original sin or any pressure to be perfect people. Paganism is exactly what you want it to be. Isn't that amazing? This is what's happening around us in the world. And this is what I'm talking about. The tip of the iceberg. And God sees the depths of it, and we don't. And coming back to time real quick, if we're not using our time, things could change overnight, and we won't be ready. And so we need to consider that. Another article, I'll just give you the title. It says enough. Half of millennials would rather live under socialism or communism rather than capitalism. Isn't that amazing? So millennials are those aged 24 to 35. And this is what they think. I go, what history are they studying? The next article. Cross-dressing queer role models read to toddlers to stop hate crimes. That's the title. And so in the United Kingdom, they have these men dressing as women coming into nurseries and teaching the young 2 to 3 year olds, reading them books and teaching them about the LGBT lifestyle. And they say, oh, this will help them later in life how not to have hate crimes towards different groups. You see how twisted the world's becoming? It's happening all around us. Right now, this is taxpayer funded, and they're testing it in a few schools, and if it works well, and I'm guessing it will in their eyes, they're going to spread it to all these other schools. And so we can begin to see what's on the horizon around the world. One last article. The title, China Unveils a 19,000-mile-per-hour hypersonic scattergun nuke to strike anywhere in the world. A few facts. This missile has been in development for more than 30 years. And guess what? It's going to be added to their arsenal in a couple months, early 2018. So it's ready to be used. It can carry up to 10 nuclear warheads, each of which can target separately. I mean, they said this, the estimated weight of this is 33 tons and it's like 45 feet long. But can you imagine firing it at this speed? I mean, they shoot it off and less than an hour later, it's hit all over the U.S. And so I don't know how we can defend against all this. It's one of the 5 most powerful missiles in the world. And in addition to that, China claims to have an arsenal of up to 2,500 missiles ready for any conflict. And so the world is at a point, and I don't know when. It could go on so much longer than we think, but it could be shorter as well. And so, brethren, my point with all this is that we have to be careful with how we use our time. Well, let me read you one other article. Experts warn Congress, North Korea, EMP, would kill 90% of Americans. That's the title. This is by Ryan Saavedra, and it was written just last month, October 13th, in the Daily Wire. Here's what it says. Chairman Dr. Graham and Chief of Staff Dr. Pry told the Committee on Homeland Security that the U.S. is now facing a doomsday scenario as U.S. intelligence grossly underestimated the capabilities of North Korea. Ambassador Henry Cooper, former director of the U.S. Strategic Defense Initiative and a preeminent expert on missile defenses and space weapons, has repeatedly warned U.S. officials about the threat presented by North Korea. And he says, current U.S. ballistic missile defense systems are not arranged to defend against even a single ICBM that approaches the U.S. from over the South Polar region. See, we've got all this protection around the world, but not in that direction. He goes on to say, so North Korea could launch a nuclear weapon over the South Polar region and detonate it over the United States to create a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse. The result could be to shut down the U.S. electric power grid for an indefinite period, leading to the death within a year of up to 90% of all Americans, as the EMP Commission testified over 8 years ago. So they've already been warning our government. My point is, we're not here to scare anybody. I'm just saying, do you see how quickly things can happen if God lets it, allows it, I should say? One last statement here. Dr. Graham and Dr. Pry stated the U.S. now faces a serious and potentially imminent threat of a nuclear EMP attack from North Korea, and that immediate action is needed. And so this is individuals in the world, not seeing it from our eyes through the Bible and prophecies, they're saying what is needed. And so these are just a few of the headlines that we're told to watch and pray about. So, are we spiritually awake? Do we believe the prophecies about world conditions prior to the return of Christ? Even those who only see the physical side, such as some of the authors of these articles, they recognize how quickly things can change. We should too. Just like Noah's day. Can you imagine if you were back at that time and it's the day before the flood comes or the week before? You would have no idea it was coming. Otherwise, they would have changed. They would have used their time better. And it truly came as a thief in the night. And so God is warning us to be awake. He's saying, one day I'll allow these things to take place and you better be ready. Let's turn to Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 21. Our belief as Christians is that one day Christ will return and the saints will be raised. There will be that resurrection where we can join the family of God, and we choose whether we're a part of that plan by how we use our time. You know, it's our choice. Are we going to be in that resurrection by the way we live our life? Matthew 24, verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Brethren, time is one of our most important resources. But we're living in a fast-paced world. There's so much going on around the world. And just even in our lives, the thoughts we have, they run through our heads, the emails that come across, the phone calls. All these things are coming at us. The work, the school, the traffic, the noise, the bills. It's all happening so fast. And we need to take time to stop and think about what God's telling us and how to get ready for what we know is coming. Sometimes we lose focus of how to properly budget our time. Let's look at verse 24. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. And I would say that those who are deceived, and I don't think God would write this unless some are, those who are deceived are not using their time properly. They're wasting time so that this all comes unawares to them. They didn't commit to the most important things on their priority list. You know, I looked at an article in the last couple of days, and we're here in December. And at the end of this month, people are going to be making New Year's resolutions. And in this article, it said that 50% of Americans make resolutions. They say, I want to change this. I want to do this. But then it said almost all of them fail. And the reason they gave is because the people weren't really willing to fulfill that. They weren't willing to commit to it. And so if we have a list of priorities, are we willing to commit to those things that are most important? We might say we're going to do it, but God says don't just be, you know, hearers or sayers, be doers. And so it's critical that we do that. How do you or how do we succeed at improving our time? Well, it's only with God's help, isn't it? I think one of the statements that Paul makes in Philippians 4 and verse 13, he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And so that's the key. If you've tried hard for years to do better at Bible study or prayer, serving, visiting the widows, the elderly, whatever it might be, and if you're not doing as well, God says, I can give you the strength to organize your time better so that you're ready for all these events that are coming, not only prior to the return of Christ, but after that, the beautiful kingdom of God. We need to be ready for that as well. We need to look to God to help manage our time. Verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. You know, we could be in the church of God We can attend here every week and still not be ready for what's coming. Just because we sit here doesn't mean our lives are changing that much. It doesn't mean that we're doing those things throughout the week that are preparing us. And we know how short life is, so we really need to think about that. Because that's what God is warning us to do. Verse 42, watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. And so here's the conclusion. It says, therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. That applies to us more than anyone else throughout history, because we're closer to the end than they were. And we have to think about that. If an EMP attack came this year, how ready would you be? I'm not saying it will. I don't know. But if it did, would we be ready? Have we used our time so that we go, God, I've done everything I can to serve you, to follow you? Or will we say, oh, no, I should have, and you fill it in. You know, I should have served more. I should have gone and visited those that are sick or those that are elderly. So whether it's the prophets of the Old Testament, Peter or Paul, we've read different things. They all remind us to value the time that we have so that we can be ready for what God is going to bring down the road. And these warnings apply to everyone that God has called down through the ages, not just to us. Do our lives reflect that we are wide awake? Are we getting ready? The good news is there's still time to improve. You know, we still have a little more time, even if it's weeks or months or years. There's still more time. And so whether we're alive or not, when all this takes place, it really doesn't matter. God is saying, while you have life, you need to use that time wisely. And we can't guarantee that we're going to live a full life. You just ask some of the people. I just read a prayer request yesterday. A lady lost her son, or her daughter, I think, but unexpectedly. She was in her 50s and just, boom, her life's gone. We do not know how much time we have in life. So therefore, it's critical to use the time that we still have. 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Notice what Paul says here in verses 1 and 2. He says, we then, as workers together with him, referring to Christ, also plead with you not to receive the grace of God in vain. Verse 2, for he says, in an acceptable time I have heard you, and in the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. And the better translation would be, now is a day of salvation, because whenever God calls you. But think about that, brethren. We have been called. We have accepted. And so our time now is to get ready for that salvation that God has promised if we follow through. And children, this applies to you as well. You think about the choices you make. And based on those choices, will determine whether you're even going to stay in the church. If you're not using your time and you go, I don't care, I'll do whatever I want, there's a good chance that you'll just leave and drift away and follow your friends as you go off to college. And so we have to be careful how we make our decisions, what music we listen to, what video games we play, what TV shows we watch. Make the most of your time. Take the steps to build your relationship with God and with others so that we're ready. One final scripture. Let's go to 1 Peter. 1 Peter 4 and verse 3. It really comes down to two, that with God's help, we can view time differently. He wants us to view it positively. He wants us to be productive in life. 1 Peter 4 verse 3. It says, for we have spent enough of our past lifetime in doing the will of the Gentiles, when we walked in lewdness, lust, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. And so we could add to that, but we've all been there in our before conversion. We've all done these things, but let's skip over to verse 17 and see why it's so important to make the most of every day. For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. Brethren, that's us. Right now, at this time, we are being judged in how we live each day. God is watching us. We're free to make the choices we want. For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the end of those who do not obey the gospel of God? And then it goes on to say, if the righteous one is scarcely saved, where will the ungodly and the sinner appear? Everyone has the same amount of time every day. And so we have to think about how we use our time. It's up to us how we spend it. We need to make a list of priorities, both physically and spiritually, and to organize that list so that we're careful in how we're living each day. We need to arrange that list. We need to follow it. And tonight isn't a bad time to sit down and say, you know, I want to talk a few minutes with your mate, with your children, or even thinking yourself, how can I do better before my God who has given me this time? How can I improve it so I show him more honor and respect? Because we have the opportunity to be positive, to be uplifting, to be encouraging, to pray for others, to listen to others, to do all these things. And God says, I've given you time, but do we leave time for those things? One last quote. The greatest gift you can give someone is your time. Because when you give your time, you are giving a portion of your life that you'll never get back. So, brethren, are we willing to spend time giving and serving and growing as the people of God? We need to make time to exercise. That's a tough one for me because it seems like I'm always so busy. Do we make time to listen to the birds sing? To talk to the neighbors? Time to fellowship. I mean, it's easy after services, like, oh, I got to get home for whatever. But do we take the time to fellowship? This is a beautiful time that God says how good and how pleasant for brethren to dwell together in unity, to talk about the things of God as the children of God. And yet sometimes we don't leave time for that. We can rush off early or show up late for services and not allow that time for fellowship. And so I encourage you, don't let the television, the Facebooking, the texting crowd out those more important things. Yes, you can put some of those in your daily schedule, but don't let them control your time. Look for a balance. Ask God. God is asking us to stop and think about his goals for us. Like, you're going to be my children. Do you really want it? Are you going to get ready for it? And so he desires that we have a good, a happy, and abundant life. And a lot of that depends on how we use our time. Each day, walk circumspectly. Be cautiously. Walk accurately. And when we work hard, which I know most of you do, when you do, be okay with what you get done. Don't say, oh, I wish I would have got so much more done. No, if you did the important things, just be okay with that. Be satisfied with that. Thank God for the life he's given you and the time that he has provided for you. Brethren, let's show God that we appreciate his gift of time by making the most of every single day.